This interview is brought to me by GetLazy.net, the best lazy town forum on the nets. Well, on my nets.
Hello and welcome to this interview from GetLazy.net. My name is Chris, maybe better known as Stingy on the Get Lazy forums, but today I have the real Stingy with me, Mr. Jody Eichelberger. Now, while I'm pretty sure that he needs no introduction, just in case somehow anybody listening is uninitiated, as I alluded to earlier, Jody was, of course, the puppeteer and voice actor for Stingy throughout LazyTown's entire television run. Jody, thank you so much for taking some time out of your day today to answer some questions from LazyTown fans.
Yeah, thank you, and I'm very interested to know that your online profile is Stingy.
Yeah, it sure is, and I'm not really sure why I ended up going with that. I guess it was just when I first started to watch LazyTown and discover LazyTown, Stingy was one of the first characters that I kind of latched onto and identified as, you know, that's the funny one. That's the one that I wanted to pay attention to. So that's just kind of what I went with.
Our cameraman referred to Stingy as the Daffy Duck of the LazyTown world.
Yeah, I can totally see where he was getting at with that. So, as always, these questions that I have for you today are coming from LazyTown fans from the Get Lazy community, and we're just going to jump right in and start with some questions about your audition. Now, we know from previous statements that you've made kind of the general story of how you got involved with LazyTown, but I wanted to ask you about some specifics. So, when you actually got to your audition and were just about to try out for the part, what were your first impressions of the character?
So there weren't really any scripts that existed at that time, and there was no video footage or anything. There was a character description. There were some drawings of the character. So pretty much we were given a sketch. And one of the things I do remember is Stingy was very robotic, which obviously I think it's obvious we didn't keep that. And the audition material that we had was a monologue about him wanting to be president of something. I can't remember what it was. So it was almost like kind of a campaign speech. I'm trying to think of like one of the lines would be like, I want to be president. You know, it was kind of like that kind of pattern where it was like you'd set it up and then it'd be like this ba-da-da at the bottom. So I don't know why I had that initial idea that he would have this kind of robotic speech pattern, but that's what I used when I auditioned.
Now, were you given, like, a puppet to work with during the audition, or did you have to do it puppetless?
Actually, it's funny because all of the characters auditioned with a Stingy puppet. So even if you were reading for Ziggy or for Bessie Busybody, it was the same puppet because they only had the one at the audition. And it was one of Gumi Thor's wit puppets. And it had been used in many performances, so it had already deteriorated quite a bit. It did have an iMech, and then it was a foam puppet, much, much lighter than the puppets in the show, and smaller than the puppets in the show. You've probably seen pictures of that puppet. He looks a lot older. So that was the puppet that was at the Viacom Nickelodeon Studios, where I did my auditions. In Times Square in New York. They're actually way more performable in many ways than the puppets we ended up using in the show, largely because of the size. If you look at a picture of there are more of them now than there used to be, pictures of puppeteers in a Henson production. You know, they're standing fairly upright, and the puppet typically ends before it reaches the puppeteer's head. Our puppets went all the way down to our shoulders. So, you know, there was constantly this problem of, well, what do we do with the puppeteer's head? And I'm sure there are pictures out there that show us in these crazy positions, like standing sideways with our head turned as far as we can turn it. I feel like one day on set, one of the wit puppets made it out there. It might have been the Ziggy puppet. It wasn't anything we were recording. It wasn't in the script or anything. It just appeared. And we just started playing with it and had a blast. It was so easy to move around. I mean, it was like a gymnast wearing like ankle weights or something while they're rehearsing, you know, and being able to play with something that was smaller and lighter released a lot of creativity and energy that, you know, we worked against sometimes with the puppets that were actually in the show, because a big part of our energy was just keeping our own bodies out of the shot, just holding and maintaining the puppet's height. Because that took a huge amount of energy just to stand upright and be in one place, let alone drag yourself around on the floor by your heels.
Yeah, I am quite familiar with those puppets. They disgust me and fascinate me at the same time. And honestly, I see them every time that I close my eyes. So if you were going to create a character based off of that design, you know, with the upturned nose and the kind of older, wrinkled look, I guess, how do you think that character would differ from the one that you ended up playing?
I mean, I hadn't seen that character's fit, because a lot of times when I'm doing puppetry, I spend quite a bit of time with the physical puppet and think about how does the shape of its body, the shape of its head, the shape of its nose affect what it might sound like. We didn't have that ability in the audition because I saw the puppet literally the moment I walked into the room. I guess one thing that it may have pushed is there was an idea for a while of having Stingy actually have a British accent. And I think with that puppet, I may have gone that way, because like you said, that he has kind of this upturn in his nose that my puppet doesn't have, which maybe just would push it for me to be more pretentious. And there's nothing maybe more pretentious than putting on a fake accent. Of course, you know, the show is dubbed into British English, but this would have been a totally different thing. Not that he actually had a British accent, but that he was putting a British accent on.
Now, did you audition for any other parts aside from Stingy?
I did. I also auditioned for Mayor Meanswell, and I also auditioned for Ziggy. And I may have auditioned for Bessie Busybody. I can't remember. You know, and that used to be a thing that males did a lot of the female roles as well. I mean, your classic example is Miss Piggy. So if I did audition for that, it was very short and we, you know, didn't move on because they knew they were going to cast a woman, which I think is the right choice. Ziggy was way more childlike than my Stingy audition. His speech pattern was like he was inventing, you know, thinking of what he was saying as he went along, as opposed to knowing what he was going to say. You probably know I toured a version of Ziggy in the US, so I certainly thought of Gumi's voice, but he has a very specific voice as well, and I, you know, I can't replicate that. But I did try to at least alter the rhythms and have Ziggy be his own thing, even if he wasn't exactly like the version that people see on TV. And I don't know if people know this, but the original plan was not for Gumi to be the voice of Ziggy. They were worried about his Icelandic accent. And so when they cast the show, their plan all along was that Gumi would be the puppeteer, but that much like Pixel, they would have a voiceover actor who was not the puppeteer, who would go in post and replace Gumi's voice. Heather Ash, who was voicing Trixie and performing Trixie at that early stages of the show, was kind of a contender to be the voice of Ziggy initially. And I think she recorded a few episodes as Ziggy. Then Gumi really proved himself in that he had such a sweetness and naivety, and the producers were won over and didn't think it was going to be a problem. And part of that might have been that this was a huge deal for the creative team in Iceland. And as much as Magnus is famous for being so confident and having a huge ego, I think there was still some concern and maybe even a lack of self-confidence that what they were doing was going to be good enough, and that an Icelandic puppeteer was going to be up to par with these other puppeteers that they were bringing in from England and from America. of course, what they didn't know is that Gumi is a superstar, and he was so talented, and we sometimes were trying to catch up to him.
So why do you think you ended up eventually getting the part? Why did the producers or whoever was making those decisions decide that you were right for Stingy and Stingy was right for you?
Well, sometimes I wonder if I was selected because I looked like the puppet.
Yeah, I've heard that, but honestly, I don't see it.
Oh, well, that's good. I like that, actually. But so many people have asked me, did they design the puppet to look like you? And, of course, I was like, no, the puppet was already sculpted and in a mold before I was even on the scene. So that hopefully isn't the real answer, because that'd be a pretty lame reason to be hired for a role just because you look like the character. It's actually a conversation that I never had with anyone. I mean, I know that Ziggy, in hindsight, they weren't really auditioning for Ziggy because they knew that Gumi was going to be performing that role. I think that one thing they responded to was how I was able to have this extreme selfishness and lack of interest in others and still be likable, which is a really hard line to play. And I'm aware that there are people that don't like Stingy and find him super annoying. So I think that that was a trick for them in casting it. There were people who auditioned, and one of the things from the sides that was clear was how selfish he was and how, you know, he only thought of himself, really. And they really played that. So I guess one of my challenges in doing it was to also show some vulnerability. And then they responded to that. But, you know, a slightly more cynical viewpoint, too, is that I think Magnus likes to get things that he's not sure he can have, maybe, is one way of saying it. I actually turned down the role right away. So after my first audition, the producer contacted me and asked me to come back for a callback. And, you know, I said, well, how many roles are there that you're casting? And she said there were six. And I said, well, how many people are you calling back? And she answered six. And I said, no. I need to not do that because you're at a point where whoever you're bringing in needs to be a yes. And I don't know that I am a yes. I haven't decided that I want to do this. So I should say no and not come in. And she got kind of quiet and said, well, thank you for, you know, being honest with me. But even if you're not going to take the role, I'd still like to encourage you to come in because the creator of the show is really coming in to meet you and see you. And I will certainly communicate to him that you're not a sure thing, but that's who he's coming to see. So if you can do it, would you come? And with that understanding, you know, I was like, oh, all right, yeah. I mean, as long as you know that I'm not necessarily saying yes to this and not expecting that, and you're not going to be upset and get angry, or then I can do that. So my callback, it was not a typical callback at all, because generally when you're called back for a role, you know, it's still an audition. You read the part, or if you have it memorized, you know, you perform the sides that you've been given, in this case with the puppet on camera. And my callback, I don't think I even read anything until like really late in the audition, because at least 20 minutes at the beginning was simply Magnus trying to sell me on the idea of moving and working in Iceland. I mean, it felt a little bit like a timeshare presentation, to be honest. But it was exciting. I mean, the thing that was keeping me back is, at the time, I was on Broadway doing Avenue Q, which was a brand new show. We opened in July, so we'd only been open for 4 or 5 months. There was a lot of excitement. The audiences were loving it. It was huge. There was some buzz about the possibility of us being nominated for a Tony. This was the only time I'd been on Broadway, so I was kind of caught up in all that. I'd moved to New York for that show. And I just wasn't sure I was ready to leave it, because it felt like we were at the beginning of something pretty exciting. actually, the way that I got the audition in the first place is that I shared a dressing room with Peter Lentz, who is a big name in the puppetry world, especially now after the new Muppet movies, because he played Walter in the new film. So they had contacted him, but he has a family and he's very established in New York, and he really couldn't even consider doing this, going to Iceland. So he's the one who passed my name on and said, well, you know, I'm not interested in this, but why don't you contact Jody and see if he would do it? Broadway is grueling. Doing 8 shows a week is intense. You only have 1 day a week off, so you can't really go anywhere. And it is the same show over and over and over to an extreme extent. I mean, I've done other theater where you can kind of alter your performance and change things. In a Broadway show, it is very precise, very exact. And if you change anything, you got notes from the stage manager, like even to the level of like breathing in a different place. Sometimes you would get a note on that. So ultimately, it was a choice of like, do I want to try something new and different in this crazy place? Or do I want to stay with this ride here, which I kind of know, and see where that goes? And I guess just as a life choice, I decided, no, I want to go on an adventure. So I'm going to leave Avenue Q and go to Iceland. Plus, Magnus was very persuasive. And obviously, the reason LazyTown happened is he's such a dynamic personality that he convinces people. I mean, how did this guy from Iceland talk to these Nickelodeon executives and get them to buy into this show created on this little island in the Atlantic? If he could persuade Nickelodeon executives to invest in this, he didn't have that much trouble convincing one lone puppeteer to move over there and do this either.
Now, is the hard-to-get strategy something that you would recommend to other up-and-coming performers?
I don't think it would work for me unless it were true. So if I really want something, I don't think it would work because I wouldn't be able to pull it off. I wouldn't be able to make them believe that I actually was willing to walk away from it. In this case, though, it was an honest response. I really wasn't sure. There probably are people that do that, but I've often joked that if I'm up for something that I don't really want, that's the thing I'll get. And if I'm up for something that I'm super passionate about and I really want to do, then that's the thing I won't get. I don't know why that is.
Well, I'm certainly happy that you ended up deciding to go with the part. But as you were explaining that story to me, I can't believe that you actually did. To have something as huge as Avenue Q locked in and to ditch that for something that you have no idea about is quite a brave decision and something I don't think I would have made myself.
Yeah, it was kind of a brave choice. One thing that might have made it a little easier, too, is I was the only cast member in Avenue Q that was from out of town, basically, because I had been hired from Portland, Oregon, and had a week to move there. So I definitely was a transplant, and everyone else really had their lives in New York. And I had never missed a Christmas with my family, and I had asked, can I take Christmas off and go back and be with my family for Christmas? And the producers said, absolutely not. That's the time we need you the most. You can't go. And I was not too happy about that. So the timing worked out. So I actually did my last performance on December 24th, on Christmas Eve. And I didn't even stay for the final curtain call. The moment I said my last line, I went up the stairs to my dressing room, grabbed my suitcase, flew out the back door, jumped in the car, and went to the airport. And I landed on Christmas morning at about 4 a.m.
So after you ended up ultimately accepting the part and things were starting to get pretty real, how did you further your definition of the character to gear up for portraying him in an actual production?
I think just like our own lives, this was something that was built over time and really was maybe my improv training, just responding to the moments. And as Stingy would take action, that would define some aspect of his personality. One of the first moments that I really remember as being like, aha, here is a character. And it's that first show that wasn't released. It was called Let's Dance. Is that what it was called?
The Lazy Dance.
The Lazy Dance? Oh, okay. So there's a scene in that where there's a bunch of balloons. I don't remember what was going on. They were flying all over the place. So I asked one of the crew members just out of the frame to just hold a balloon for me, because everyone was throwing balloons up in the air and bouncing balloons. And maybe one of Stingy's first impulses that kind of woke up in my mind was that he was just going to hold the balloon and just be like hugging it and wouldn't let it go. So as everyone's running around in this pandemonium of balloons, I took Stingy just to the edge of the frame and grabbed this balloon from the crew member and just kind of did a slow walk across camera, just like hugging the balloon at a completely different energy level than everyone else. And that felt immediately right. And I think actually that was my first time I got a note from Magnus too, where when he saw that, he was like, yes, yes, that. So that really started the path of how Stingy reacts to objects, that they're just all so important to him. And he notices everything, and he's tactile, he likes to touch it, and sometimes he even imbues personalities to objects, has conversations with objects. So those were all things that developed. And then, you know, from that comes, he takes care of things because they're important to him, so he likes them to be clean. So that's how that part of his personality built, where he started having this cleaning fetish. And then his interactions with the other people, I think it was clear that he and Ziggy were friends pretty early on. He and Trixie's relationship was pretty fluid. There were times where it seemed like they were rivals, and then other times where it seemed like they liked each other. Yeah, so it definitely was a progression. And then early on, I also had the idea that he would try to say words that were bigger than he knew. I mean, the classic example, of course, is the word triagonal, which I understand has gotten some attention. And, you know, that's a song that we recorded in 2004, if you can believe that. And that was a moment that happened in the sound studio, and that's just, you know, basically me and Mountie. And it is written as this triangular sign. Those are the lyrics. But somehow in that moment, when we got to that word, I just had the idea that triangular was kind of too big of a word for him. I guess that's probably the biggest example. I know that there are other words that I mispronounced on purpose. I can't think of one off the top of my head right now, but he would do that from time to time. And, you know, with Nickelodeon in particular, we were a little nervous about that because they had a very strict list of things about safety. And I was concerned that they were going to give me trouble for intentionally mispronouncing words, that I'd be teaching kids the wrong way to say things. But we got away with it.
Now, did you use any previous interpretations of the character to help you define him, such as the interpretations in the 90s stage plays, or did you do it pretty much completely on your own?
Well, I had never seen the stage play, so I certainly didn't have that as a reference. Really, the only framing for the character that I was given initially was this idea of him being extraordinarily selfish. You know, that leaves him being very two-dimensional. So from there, yeah, I think it was primarily my job to flesh that out and come up with other things about him besides him just being selfish. And I don't even know what the puppet version that we auditioned with, because the stage play, Stingy was played by an actor in a costume, so I'm not even completely sure I understand what that puppet character was used for.
Yeah, I'm not totally sure either. Trust me, I'd like to get Gumi Thor on the program one of these days to ask him about that. But
yeah.
I know that it was just kind of for a brief period between like 99 and like 2003. Yeah, I honestly don't know a whole lot about them, and I would really like to know more.
There was a chicken that was used in the stage show. or a rooster, I guess.
Yeah.
And there was even talk about the rooster making it into the TV show for a while. So we kind of wondered if we were going to have another puppet character arrive. That never did happen, though.
So one thing you were talking about earlier is, you know, how you came up with a voice for Stingy. Now, Stingy's voice is very character-defining. It has a very rich character built within the voice. On a physical level, how do you maneuver your tongue and your palate and so on to create that voice?
Well, part of it is working with what you have, obviously, and I have a pretty good-sized nasal cavity. So that is one thing that just happens naturally. But on a physical level, I mean, some of it is a given, which is that this is a prepubescent character. So, you know, the first thing you have to do is just raise your voice into a higher register. Not all the way into falsetto, because we're not going to use that, but, you know, up into the higher head voice. And then the next thing was to move it forward into where my nose is. So your primary resonator is not your chest, or your head, actually, but your nose. And then I guess the next thing I do after that is fun things like the coloring of words, like gold. Which then, you know, affects the character as well. Obviously pacing and timing, and, you know, he can talk really fast when he gets excited about something. I treated words like objects sometimes. So his famous line, "I caress it because I possess it," you know, this idea of him really caressing language as well and taking time to say the words and every syllable. One thing that happened a lot is the writers would put in contractions. And, you know, on a very basic level, I was like, no, Stingy doesn't like contractions. He likes to say the whole word because then he gets to have more letters. So I would almost automatically translate contractions into, you know, the full phrase. So it often would happen where there'd be like a sentence like, no, I can't do that. And he would, of course, change it to, no, I cannot do that.
Here's a question I'm interested to ask you specifically because of your skepticism of LazyTown at the beginning. You know, I know that LazyTown at the very beginning was in a very tumultuous environment. When you walked on there and you started production, were you thinking like, oh shit, what have I got myself into? Or, yes, this is great. I made the correct decision. I can't wait.
Well, you know, when we first got there, nothing was ready. So I guess I was a little nervous. In fact, the puppets didn't even have color on their faces, the ones that were assembled. So they were just pale white ghosts in foam latex. Costumes were partial. I think the set was mostly built. The studio itself was still under construction. A lot of puppeteers are also builders, and so at that phase, they can get kind of excited because maybe they got to be a little involved in some of the construction elements of the characters. Although in this case, Neil Scanlon's team, you know, pretty much had it covered, so we weren't even asked so much to be involved in that respect. But for me, as strictly a performer and not a builder, it was an extremely awkward time because there really wasn't anything for me to do when I first got there. There weren't scripts necessarily to rehearse. You know, I had a few meetings with our first director, who was Kirk Thatcher, to just talk about the character a little bit, you know, try some different phrases and things with him in voice and discuss, you know, what we were thinking of doing with the character. And even physically, we didn't have a place to be. We didn't have a dressing room at that point or anything, or a green room. So we were kind of hanging out in this, what later really did become a very nice gym workout area. I think it had mirrors even at the time. So we kind of would come in and throw our bags on the floor. We didn't even have chairs in there that I remember. And occasionally we would hang out with some form of puppet in the various stages of construction. But it was a pretty awkward time, just not having anything ready. Also early on, we were spending quite a bit of energy with these puppets that were used very little in the end, that were kind of these modeled after Bunraku style, where it took two or three puppeteers, and it was head to toe characters. So we were wearing these shoes that would move the puppet's feet, and then we had rods for their hands, and then a rear entry head, and, you know, trying to do things. It would be the full character as opposed to just, you know, the half puppet. Eventually those were abandoned completely because they ended up being so problematic, not just from a performance aspect, but also lighting wise. You know, they were trying to do a lot of green screen stuff and get rid of us using green screen. And that would prove to be very challenging technically because of all the shadows and everything. So I think one of the only scenes those were used in is the first version of the Welcome to LazyTown. There's a scene, I think, with Sporticus doing flips and all the puppets are standing there and kind of watch him go by. And that was one where we used that style of puppet. And then there's one scene where Ziggy is flying a kite that I think we used that full body puppet for that. And then other than that, it was a huge investment in something that didn't pay out. And then eventually, of course, they moved to this idea of the stunt kids, which we had mixed feelings about the success of that, but that is, it allowed them to do those full body shots. Once we started shooting, I was amazed by the scale of the production. I mean, the studio is beautiful, and so that was really exciting. And, you know, and one of the things about moving a production to Iceland is it did allow for there to be a lot more space. I mean, any of our studios in New York are just way smaller, and you don't have that luxury of all this room, which was really nice. And then just scrambling, really, because it was all brand new, trying to get a sense of the character, trying to get a sense of these puppets, which weren't like any puppets that any of us had performed with before. Just based on their size and their weight. Early on, we were ramping everything, but that kind of changed quickly to putting us on the floor on these rolly carts. So that was a different style of performance as well, having to figure out how to move on those carts. So yeah, early on, it was really just a lot of absorbing, processing, and not really any sense of whether the show was good or not. Or whether my performance was good. We weren't at that phase yet to even be able to evaluate that.
How does the stingy puppet work mechanically, especially the half puppet version, which, you know, you said was the dominant version once LazyTown kind of really got the groove on? So you have, you know, obviously your hand in the puppet, but on the inside, how does that all work?
You know, it's amazing to me how people often ask, like, are you inside that puppet? You know, and it's like, no, I mean, I'm not inside it. Goodness. I mean, my hand is inside it. Because to me, it's such a simple thing. But I realize that actually, there are a lot of people who have no concept of how they work. So for me, anyway, it's my right hand that's inside the mouth of the puppet. And because the material that they're made from is so flexible, you actually do get a lot of movement in addition to the lip sync. You know, you can do some other facial expressions as well. And the other thing is Stingy's, I think he has the smallest head in the cast. So that was a consideration as well. And they actually did mold some of the function inside the head is exactly measured on my hand. And that's true of the other characters as well. So very rarely we had to fill in for other puppeteers. I occasionally performed Ziggy also in the TV show. But the inside of that head is, and the mech in there is modeled after Gumi Thor's hand. So it was a sloppy mess. You know, when I first go in, I can't. So we had to figure out, well, how can I even get my hand to fit this correctly so we can shoot something? Then the first season, we only had moving eyelids, and they actually weren't even separated from the forehead. And that's done with a cable, but it was challenging because when you tried to close the eye, it's actually pulling on the entire forehead and scalp of the puppet because it's all one sheet essentially that's been laid onto the skeleton. Then in, I think it was the very next season, the second season, they added the moving eyebrows for some of us, at least. I don't remember if every character had moving eyebrows. Certainly Stingy and Ziggy do. And The other big innovation is that the eyelid was separated from the rest of the head so that it was way easier to open and close your eyes. And then you could also change your eyebrows, which added a huge amount of expression, particularly in Stingy's case, because unlike some of the other characters, he can be in a bad mood quite often and be negative about something, which is, you know, aside from Robbie Rotten, kind of an unusual thing to happen for the characters in LazyTown. And that's run with a cable that goes up through inside the puppet, and on the rod that's attached to the hand, there are two levers that I pull on in order to open and close the eyes and raise and lower the eyebrows. And for people who are watching really closely, you might notice scenes where Stingy might be opening and closing an eye or moving his eyebrows, and his hand is at the bottom of the frame, and there's no reason for it to move. It is meant to be steady. But because the mech is attached to that hand, when his eyes move, you might see the hand shake slightly, because it actually is attached to the same rod, so it's pretty hard to keep it steady when you're trying to open and close eyes and move eyebrows. Then one of the problems we had with the eyebrows is they would lift off the face, and so we had to, you know, keep paying attention to that, or the tension would be wrong and they'd be stuck in a lower position instead of more neutral. And there's also two different skulls, because we have to switch the heads pretty much every other episode. There's a brand new head. So every other episode, I'm actually using a completely different puppet. And one of them worked for me a little better than the other one, actually. So that's kind of different, too, because when you switch between those two different skulls, you have to remember, you know, what was the funky thing about this one that's a little different than the other one. I guess one of the most challenging things is, for some reason, Gumi and I were opposite in what we had as eye closed and eye up. So whenever I did move over to Ziggy, it would take me a little while to reset, like, oh, that's open and that's closed, because it was backwards, because we each had our own individual preference for that.
You said you puppeteer with your right hand. Now, one of the tremendous difficulties that puppeteers have while filming LazyTown is all these cramped spaces and closed quarters. Are you stuck in using your right hand, or can you puppeteer with your left?
I am really crappy with my left hand. So I avoided that as much as I could, particularly if there's lip sync involved. I'm just not great with my left hand. So I'm sure I could count on one hand even over the course of the 10 years that we were filming off and on how many times I had his head on my left hand. I think when it happened is if there was some reason I was using a live hand, and it had to be the right hand that was live, and I didn't use a second puppeteer. So it might have been an action shot where I'd have his head with my left hand, and I was using my right hand to do something. But usually, even in that situation, he would be left-handed, because I'd keep my right hand in his head, and I would use my own left hand as a live hand. More often, when we used live hands, we would have our second do both of the live hands, and then we would just concentrate on the head and the eye and eyebrow mech, particularly when there was both the eye and the eyebrow. I think the first season, when it was just the eyes, more often I would do the hand myself and someone else would run the eye mech for me. But as we got later on, I preferred to keep that control of the eyebrows and the eyes. So I would pass off both hands to the second.
Now, as the show progressed, I think that you quickly became very dominant in the musical side of the show. As far as, like, especially the puppet characters go, you have the most dominant position, and you're also in, you know, the background vocals of many, many songs. How did you become so musically active in LazyTown?
The first thing that happened is the background vocals, actually. And it may be because I was hired off of Broadway. So they obviously knew I was a singer, and Mountie knew that he wanted Stephanie's songs, particularly in choruses, that there would be this texture underneath. So the very first song we did, he'd asked me, like, will you sing background vocals under Stephanie? you know, and at first I had to ask, like, well, do you mean, do I sing the background vocals as Stingy, or is this me doing it? In most cases, he wanted it just to be me singing background vocals, although occasionally Stingy would sing background vocals if he was in the scene. I remember being very disappointed, though, when I first heard that first song playback, because, you know, we spend quite a bit of time in the studio recording those, and I record every song, well, every part of every song, because sometimes I did multiple harmonies, and I would do it 4 times for every single track. You know, and in the studio, it was obviously I'm hearing it, and I'm hearing my voice, and it's pretty big. But in the final mix, it's almost subliminal. When they played it on the set, I was like, am I even singing on this? I can't even tell I'm there. Some songs, you know, it is more prevalent, like No One's Lazy in Lazy Town. That one I have more presence in because I think it's a bigger chorus. But there's probably a lot of songs that people aren't even aware that I am singing them as well, because it's more of a pad underneath that just fills it out and supports it. In fact, I would say I probably sang nearly every song that Stephanie sang. Even, you know, when Stingy's not in it, there was some presence, whether it was an ooh or an ah or some kind of echo. And I guess part of that is that my singing voice is pretty like, so it's not an individual soloist sound necessarily that's super distinct. So it worked well for that. And I enjoyed doing it. There was a little snafu in the beginning with my agent saying, like, this isn't part of your job. You weren't contracted to be a background vocalist on all these songs. But I don't know. I mean, part of being in Iceland is it removed us from a lot of those legalities to some extent. And I enjoyed doing it, so I sang those. The first song that we recorded must have been the Mine song, I'm guessing, because that was the one that was already in the stage show. You know, it became part of Stingy's personality that he sang, and it was successful. I remember having at one point, before we did one of the other songs, having to kind of prove to Magnus that the puppet could sustain a song, because he at first wasn't sure that the puppet character would be able to hold people's attention through a song. The most unusual one, I guess, is I Am a Prince, because that one, you know, of course, Stingy's the lead singer, but I also did all of the background vocals for that as myself. So that was fun. Probably my favorite song, though, really, in terms of the performance and everything, is The World Goes Round and Round, just because that set was so great, and the shooting circumstances were really nice. Most of the song, I got to have my live hands, and Julie Westwood and I worked really well together, and she was my live hands for that, which she wasn't so much later on as we got further into the seasons. Plus, the way we shot that, you know, really, we would go through the whole song, whereas the Mine song, really, I think the longest segment that was continuous was basically one sentence, and that's just a lot harder to enjoy as a performer, because there's not as much of a through line, you know, in terms of the arc of your performance. It's pretty hard to do that, whereas The World Goes Round and Round, you know, I was able to shoot entire phrases and really the entire verse. And I enjoyed that process more.
Something I wanted to ask you about was the time that you spent recording LazyTown Extra. Now, as a LazyTown fan, and especially a LazyTown fan in my position, it is a great shame to admit that it took me up until just a few months ago to find the stomach to watch LazyTown Extra. This is not your fault. It's Ziggy. Okay, I can't do it. I can't do the Ziggy parts at all. So I neglected them for so long, but after speaking with David Feldman about his experience filming LazyTown Extra and how unique he thought it was, I decided I would give it a watch, and I don't regret it for a minute. I think that the performances of, you know, you and David and of Julie, all these performances are fantastic. So I really regret waiting that long to see it, but I'm curious to know if you echo kind of that mentality that it was a special, unique opportunity to film LazyTown Extra.
Yeah, David was probably more articulate about this than I am, but it really was a special experience for us as puppeteers because it was more the way puppetry is typically shot. So many of those scenes were between two puppets, particularly in my case, because I was primarily with the mayor. That allowed us to have a lot of the fetters taken away because we weren't typically on our backs on the floor. We were working in a set that had been elevated, and that improves our ability to perform. The camera angles were set for us. We didn't have to accommodate a human standing in the scene for the most part. I mean, it was tricky in the sense that we had switched from a single camera shoot, which the first season was all done with one camera, and LazyTown Extra was a three-camera shoot, which is pretty challenging as a puppeteer because you're watching multiple monitors simultaneously. With a single-camera shoot, you know, you're focused on a wide shot, and you do what you need to do to be the most effective in the wide shot. But then when you get your close-up, you know, you're focused on that. And you might perform differently than you did in the wide shot because you're really looking at nuance and facial expression and lip sync. Whereas in the wide shot, you're more concentrated on the body arc and the profile or however you're standing or your relationship to the rest of the set. So that was challenging because it was all happening all at once. You know, actually, I don't know what percentage it would be, but David and I kind of wrote a lot of those scenes to some extent, sometimes while we were shooting them. You know, we had a script going in, but I think, well, David in particular, I mean, he is a writer, and I am more of an improviser, so for me, a lot of the ideas would happen once we were on set, and we were able to work them out very quickly and have that freedom to do that. And primarily, it making the scenes funnier was really the main goal, because, you know, the message of what we were there to achieve was already blocked out. So my main focus anyway was, how do I make this more entertaining than it is right here on the page? And we had the freedom to do that in LazyTown Extra that didn't exist in the larger show. Because, you know, there were so many other factors to include when you only have a two-character setup. You know, it's all about you. So that was fun.
Earlier on in the interview, you mentioned how Stingy was maybe going to have a faux British accent at one point, and how they ended up doing that anyway with the UK dub of the show. But what do you think about having your voice overdubbed? Is that something you, like, take as like a personal offense, or is it just kind of something that you have to deal with?
Well, you know, I mean, I don't know if they really meant it, but they did ask me to do the British voice. Actually, I ended up getting the call when I was in another audition in New York, so it was kind of a short conversation. The thing that was a problem with that is they weren't willing to record it on my schedule, so it was like, you know, we'll do 2 days of recording Stingy here, and then we'll do 2 days of recording Stingy there, and it was just kind of on and on and on. And it really wasn't viable for me to fly over every other week to do voiceover stuff. One thing that made it easier in that case is I was the only one who knew the person who was dubbing my voice, and I love and respect that performer. So that was kind of nice in a way that it wasn't a stranger. And I think also it was nice because Sarah was with me when the original recordings took place. Like, she knew something about the motivations and something about why Stingy said things the way he said them. And I think she was more sensitive to that than, you know, somebody who wasn't there would be. Of course, the other part is that, I mean, yes, that's the English language, but that's part of the role, is that I've been dubbed into I don't know how many languages now. And there's actually something that's really fun about that. And also, it's interesting to hear people some people at least, have tried to do my voice. I can tell that they're trying to do that, which is fun and flattering. some people, it seems like they haven't tried at all. Because I'm like, I hear it and I'm like, what the heck is that? That's nowhere near his voice. But there's some that are super scary. I think Norway maybe was one where I was like, oh my gosh, that sounds like me speaking Norwegian. That's crazy. It also is pretty funny, like in the Mind song, you know, there's that moment where Stingy says that instrumental break is also mine. And that was something that spontaneously happened while we were recording. Mountie and I were recording in the studio. Standing in a studio silent is kind of awkward, and listening to a musical break, it's like when you're trying to do karaoke and they get to the musical break and you're just standing on stage and you're like, what do I do now? And, you know, partly also being in Stingy's head while we're recording, he just blurted that out. The idea that now all of these people in recording studios all across the world have to translate that and record it in their language is kind of thrilling, actually.
You mentioned earlier that you, worked with Sarah Burgess. Am I pronouncing that right? Burgess?
Yeah.
On the show. And, you know, she's the one who ended up dubbing Stingy for the UK dub. Did you actually work with her to create a voice, or did she just passively pick that stuff up?
No, I didn't work with her on it. She just used the experience of having shot the show together, you know, and hearing my Stingy voice like every day. And I don't know what she was given when she recorded it. I don't know if when they do the playback, if they hear the original voice for rhythm purposes. I actually don't know how that works technically. So it may be that my voice is there when they dub it. But no, it wasn't something we worked on specifically. But she did mention to me that she was certainly very conscious of the way that I performed the role when she did it for the dub.
Are there any parts of the character that you feel are underexplored? Like, are there any thoughts that you have about Stingy in the back of your mind that you're just waiting for an opportunity to present?
Well, not really, because so much of Stingy's development happened on set in the moment. And I've said before, like, I know when we're in it, when things are in the right place, when there isn't a lot of forethought or pre-planning, and I almost reach a state where I'm watching the monitor and I feel like I'm part of the audience watching what Stingy does. Like, oh, what's he going to do now? What's he going to do now? I feel a separation as the puppeteer from the character in a way, that he's doing it himself, that I'm just a witness to that. And that's the way I like it. I think that's the way that he has the most life. Whereas if I come in with a pre-programmed idea, typically that's not going to be as good. There won't be the same level of life kind of jumping off the screen that there is when it happens on its own. I think it's a stronger performance when there isn't a lot of planning and forcing Stingy, you know, into a pre-planned, programmed idea of, well, this is what he's going to do. I mean, sure, technically, if there's an object involved, there has to be some planning because there's so many elements that go into dealing with an object as a puppet, how you rig it and how it's manipulated and who's helping with that. And so those things you have to be very precise about. But in terms of like character responses and ways of even saying the lines, I really tried to preserve that for the moment that we were recording and liked to be in a place where I felt confident that Stingy would be ready to respond when it was time for him to respond. And I didn't necessarily know what he was going to do. And I should also say that that is individual to me. I think that probably the most extreme ends of it would be Ron Binion. He is very methodical and plans, I think, probably everything. And I think that probably David would say that he plans quite a lot. He knows what he's going to do. So I'm the opposite spectrum. And there's probably strengths and weaknesses to both sides of that. But I am maybe faulted in that I pre-plan very little.
So you were able to portray Stingy on and off for 10 years over 4 seasons plus LazyTown Extra. How did your understanding of the character evolve over time?
Well, we had the base of him being selfish, so that was a given. I suppose one of the next things that came about was when Piggy was introduced, and I don't remember when he first appeared or how early that was, but that introduced a new element of this idea of, and this was something that wasn't in the scripts, that Stingy would talk to Piggy and refer to Piggy and listen to Piggy sometimes. And that carried over also to Stingy's car, where he would treat his car like a person as well. I think it's easier to see that with Piggy because, you know, Piggy has eyes and can be carried around. But I do remember a car waxing scene or something where there was some amount of talking to the car and singing to the car. And we started having the running gags, and I don't even know how those developed. But, you know, of course, one of them is whenever Robbie Rotten would say forever, I don't know how this came about, but Stingy would always have this response of, for how long did you say? And we just kept doing that, and I don't even know why. But that's something that developed. His pronunciation of certain words, later on, it really kind of became a given that if he had the word gold, you know, it was going to have a weird pronunciation. I'm not sure where that came from, but it was something that we discovered and kept. Are there other aspects of his personality that you notice that you wonder, like, how early did that develop, or was that always there, or was it something that was added later?
For example, something that I have in my mind is early on in, you know, season one, the "it's mine" was really important. I feel like that kind of fell off, not completely, but certainly did fall off in its prevalence over the seasons. And, you know, maybe that's because the understanding of Stingy was less of he's just a selfish psychopath and he's a kind soul who's just anal retentive.
So early on, yeah, that was definitely kind of the idea that was his catchphrase, I guess. But I really felt that was too easy, and the repetition of it became sort of annoying to me anyway. So I think I, and the writers too, to some extent, worked at finding other ways to show that rather than saying it's mine, so that the possessiveness became apparent through other phrases and also through actions. One of the first times that it reversed where he said, no, that's not mine. Wasn't it something about a, like a vicious dog or something that he was like, that's mine. No, that's not mine. But there was a moment when we were filming the pyramid show that he turned, what did he do? There was something where it was his fault and he had some line that got cut. It was an improvised line that was something about, the fault is mine, but I don't want it to be. And that seemed like a great line to me, but, you know, we were so pressed for time that anything that wasn't crucial to the show got cut out a lot of time, which was another advantage of LazyTown Extra, is that there was more space for things to be there like that. In the larger show, it was just such a crunch, and everything we shot, we overshot. So there's tons of footage that just doesn't end up in the show. And then occasionally have the example where we shot so much that they went ahead and got approval to split it into two episodes, like with the Purple Panther. You know, that was originally intended to be one episode, but we had so much material that they went ahead and split it into two.
Now, do you have an all-time favorite Stingy quote?
That's a good question. An all-time favorite Stingy quote. There's another moment that popped into my head that also didn't make it into the show, which isn't really a great example of a Stingy quote, but it was a moment that I just loved, where he turned to Ziggy and went, "Hush, child, hush."
Oh, what a tragedy that didn't make it into the show.
It was cut. But there was a lot of stuff that made it into the shows that I didn't expect to, because they weren't scripted lines. This may have irritated some of the other puppeteers, actually, but I generally felt that if there was a hole, I would fill it with something, particularly in reaction shots. You know, it was basically nonstop babble from Stingy. So these are shots where a lot of times there's not even anyone else on set, and the director is describing to you the action that's taking place, and it's just you on camera imagining that action and reacting to it. You know, and some of the other characters do that, and that for them it's really about eye lines and following, you know, what they imagine the action that's taking place to be. But a lot of times for Stingy, it was just a running dialogue of comment on the action. And I can see how that would get pretty annoying if you're standing next to that and he's just running his mouth all the time.
He's a bit of a diva.
He is a bit, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't expect you to have a good answer to my next question, but the fans want to know. I got a lot of questions about it, so I figured I might as well just go ahead and ask. Given that LazyTown is not producing at the time, we just don't know, you know, what the future of LazyTown is going to bring. Do you know anything about what's up ahead?
No, I don't. And I don't know who would, honestly. You may know more than I do. I'm not even confident I know who owns the property right now.
I don't really know anything about the future. There have been rumblings, I guess, of, like, Stefan going to England to do something for, like, maybe a LazyTown cartoon. I've only heard of this. I've never seen the actual source, but I think that a LazyTown cartoon is a tremendous idea. I can't believe that LazyTown was not a cartoon to begin with. Do you feel like you would be willing to portray Stingy as a cartoon character, or do you kind of want to stick with puppeteering?
Well, you know, one of our writers, Mark, had always been gunning for a cartoon as well, just because for him as a writer, it offered a lot more flexibility, although I think he was amazed that things that he could put in the script and then they would appear in the real world like a week later that seemed kind of impossible, even in his mind as he wrote them. I would say I would definitely participate in voicing Stingy as a cartoon, partially because one of my favorite experiences, and this surprised me, I was hired to do the voice of a character called Oliver in a PBS show called Nate the Great, which I was contracted for 40 episodes. Unfortunately, we made it through about 20, and the company was shut down for embezzlement.
Oh my God.
So the show never made it on the air, but it was one of my favorite experiences, and honestly, that did surprise me, because you would think as a puppeteer, I would really prefer the experience of being able to create the visual performance as well. But I loved just working in the soundstage and recording the character. I felt so free to just focus on the character through the voice. And I honestly would be kind of excited to find out how Stingy would grow if I wasn't tethered to the puppet and was really completely focused on his vocal performance. You know, I really appreciate like what we talked about with the improv and watching him do things. But the thing is, you know, there is of course a huge percentage of my brain, even if it's kind of on autopilot, that is being used to just keep the puppet upright and look the right direction and move a certain way. And if I'm not using that in the performance and all of my brain basically is used for the vocal performance, I think Stingy could really develop further in some very interesting ways. And then hopefully the animators would pick up on that and they could do some fun things with it too based on the performance.
Yeah, I'd really love to see a LazyTown cartoon. I really can't overstate how much that needs to happen. And I would really hope that that does happen and that you're involved with it someday.
Yeah, I would love to get a call that said, hey, we want you to come in and record some LazyTown episodes for an animated series. That would make my day.
Let's hope that day comes. Do you have any props or memorabilia that you've taken, maybe against their will, to your home here in the USA?
I have a Cheerios advertisement that was in the bus stops in Iceland that is Stingy eating a bowl of Cheerios. And I think that might be the only thing that I was able to get out of the studio, which seems quite remarkable. I mean, I have some scripts, I have some storyboards, but any actual physical property I wasn't able to take. We advocated that the puppets would come to us, you know, once they kind of were shutting the studio down in Iceland. And I have no idea where those puppets are, but they didn't come to us. At least I didn't get one. That would be what I would want, of course, is to have Stingy here.
It seems cruel, now that I'm thinking about it, to not give you a puppet.
Yeah. Like I said, I don't even know where they are. We definitely asked, like, for them. I know at least David and I were like, hey, why don't you give us our puppets? David also was like, you know, if we had the puppets, we could even be doing some content for YouTube or something just to keep the brand going, you know, for very little expense, which I could easily see, particularly after the LazyTown Extra experience. I mean, just having Stingy and the mayor being able to sit and shoot the breeze could be pretty fun.
Well, I sure hope that those puppets are anywhere but in the dumpster.
Yeah, I can't imagine that that's where they are. But, of course, they do have a shelf life. I mean, those heads are going to rot. So, yeah.
Well, that's not the lightest of notes here.
No, that's pretty gloomy.
So maybe we can brighten it up here. What are some of the most lasting memories that you have of your experience working in LazyTown?
Well, one of the effects of it, of course, is really it was my dream job, working and living there. And I think in some ways it was easier for me than it was for some of the other performers who maybe had lived primarily in New York. I think some of the other performers may have had a list of more negatives of being away, but for me, I preferred being there. So generally, any break that we had, you know, a lot of people would go back to their homes, but I typically stayed in Iceland during all the breaks. I'm back in Boise now, which is where I grew up as well. And it's amazing to me how there are some similarities between Reykjavik and Boise that I find quite striking. And probably me leaving New York, a portion of that decision was based on my time in Reykjavik and experiencing that quality of life and kind of realizing that that wasn't a compromise I really wanted to make. So after we finished the last season, I pretty much made the choice to leave New York and make quality of life a higher priority than even career opportunity. So the country itself was a huge highlight, being able to travel through the country, experience the landscape and the people and the culture. And that's all kind of independent of the show, really. But I love doing the production. You know, it really became a family for me. Any opportunity to be performing. And I love that character. Everything was a plus for me.
Now, it would be terribly irresponsible of me to have this interview and not bring up the Mind Song memes that have gained a recent popularity. Sounds like you're at least at some level aware of those, is that right?
Not a huge amount, and I don't know how many there are or which ones are the most popular. I don't know, what are the most successful ones? What are they all about?
Well, it's funny you should ask. I actually have some with me here that I'd like to get your reaction to.
Oh, okay.
So first, we have the classic, the Mind Song.
I am a pretty critical person, so this might not be that pleasant.
This mailbox is mine, and this triagonal sign, that blue balloon, the month of June.
So yeah, like his focus is a little ahead of the balloon.
The Ziggy sweets are mine.
This is the version where his eyelids are one entire sheet, so you can't move his eyebrows or his eyelids that well.
It all belongs to me.
Yeah, his access is off there, so. Focus is too high. Julie's doing great work with the hands here, though.
And this instrumental break is also mine.
A little bit of a lip sync could have been better with the release of the end.
All your feelings are mine. You always knew it. That's all there is to it. It's mine, 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 mine. mine.
Yeah, so on some level, it would have been fun to be able to record that again with the newer puppet that had the moving eyebrows and the better functioning eyelids. Generally, I always prefer in these songs to use the live hands because you can express more musically in your hands that are live as opposed to the armatured, wired hands. And then I mentioned, I think, before that one of the things that I don't enjoy about this song as much as some of the others is it's so chopped up because of all of the changing sets.
I can't believe how terribly critical you were of your puppeteering there. It's incredible. The Mind song, the origins, it always kind of been a mystery to me because the song, if you remember, maybe you don't, was never really performed in an episode. It was always kind of a reference to, like, hey, Stingy, remember that time you sang the Mind song? You can see the clip. Do you remember when that song was originally, or what it was originally created for?
Well, it's funny because I remember the time that it was referenced was in Dear Diary.
Mm-hmm.
And we had already done it in a previous episode. But actually, as you're saying that, it's not connected to any plot point. So it was an earlier episode than Dear Diary when it first appeared. At least I thought it did.
I promise, the song does not show up as like a standalone song in the episode. It's only ever referenced to in clip shows like Dear Diary, LazyTown's Greatest Hits, and I think Pixels Picks.
You know what? I think we did it for Pixels Picks. Does that come before Dear Diary? It must.
It does, yeah.
Yeah, so it was recorded for Pixels Picks. I believe that's correct, because that would make sense that it's not attached to any sort of plot, because it was just like a segment within, you know, this Pixel Picks show. So yeah, I think that was the one we did it for, and then, you know, later it got picked up for kind of the clip show, probably because it's just so self-contained.
Right. So this next one I have is the original song that was composed in the 90s that the Mind song was based after. The song is just called Nene Niski, which is just Stingy's name in Icelandic.
Right.
Yeah, as the Mind song meme has developed, this version of the song has been discovered by a tremendous amount of people. I'm sure hundreds of thousands more than anybody ever would have imagined. And, you know, it's gained some traction because the performance is so over the top. And I'm really interested to know about what you think of this performance of Stingy.
I probably met this guy at some point. Oh, look, he's got a little piggy. Well, there's a lot of excessive movement would be my first comment in the performance, so I'm not sure why there's so much popping happening here. I mean, it's fun to see the roots, like to see the big tie and to see the yellow jacket. I mean, I feel a little bad for this performer in that it's really hard to sing and jump, you know, so I also had the advantage that I'm not singing the song while I'm performing, you know, it's performed a track. So any of the music in the show, we do separately from our performance. So it doesn't get affected like that. I mean, you can hear him, his tone is off because he's bouncing up and down, and that doesn't happen to us because when we sing the song, we're in the comfort of the sound studio and have no distractions. And then on set, we just have to lip sync to it. So that's a big advantage.
The character in the play is actually not too far off from the character that we had in the show. You know, there's still, it's Mine. You know, that's,
yeah,
it still translates in there. And even some specific scenes are directly lifted from the play. For example, there's one where you, I believe it's in Sports Day, which is essentially this play wrapped up into a little episode. where Stingy is refusing to let go of a baton in the in the relay race. That scene is lifted exactly from this play. It's interesting to go back and see what and what did not make it into the television series.
Sports Day was really the first episode we shot that made it on the air, I believe. That baton scene with Stingy, I think we shot it like 2:30 in the morning because we were still trying to find our feet. And it was early enough before somebody wisely said, you know, we can't do this. Like, we have to have a start time and a finish time because we're going to kill ourselves if we keep working like this. So I don't think we ever shot that late again. But I can even hear in my voice in that scene that I was so exhausted that it was just cracking. And I mean, it worked for the scene because it was kind of an intense scene, but it wasn't a healthy voice. That was a really tired voice.
So the next one here, it's the first actual, you know, meme. It's called The Mind Song, But Everything is Stingy, made by Zamination 2.
This mailbox is stingy, and this triagonal sign. The blue balloon, the month of June, the stingy, 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 stingy. Ziggy's tweets are stingy. That birdie's tweets are stingy. The city street, both your feet, they're all emphatically stingy.
Oh, I mean, I think that the creativity is pretty great.
Everything that I see, north, south, east, and west, I caress it, because I possess it. And it's stingy. And this instrumental break is also stingy. The floor and ceiling are stingy. All your feelings are stingy. You always knew it. That's all. Oh. It's stingy, 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 stingy.
I think Stingy would like this.
It's stingy.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing how technology is so accessible now and that people can take this footage and reshape it and manipulate it in different ways. I'm stingy. So I can tell that she took that from the phrase, I'm stingy and it's mine. So she used that one over and over. Yeah, that's cool.
All right, so the next one here we have is All Star, but to the tune of The Mind Song by person named Hex Cubed.
Somebody once told me the world is gonna roll me. I ain't the shop, Miss Hool in the shed. She was looking kind of.
As I hear you listening to this, I feel like such an idiot for linking this to you.
I mean, does this normally go like, hey now, I'm a rock star?
You got it.
Oh, okay.
Smart, but your head gets dumb. So much to do, so much to see. So what's wrong with taking the back streets? You'll never know if you don't go.
Again, I think it's interesting how people can take a source and reshape it like that to pitch bend it into a different melody.
Hey now, you're an all-star. Get your game on, go play. Hey now, you're a rock star. Get the show on, get paid.
Well, that's a little less accessible for me because I'm not that familiar with the source material. I see that one's a little more popular than the other one, but for me, I would reverse it. I mean, for me, it's more fun to watch it when the source kind of stays within the world of LazyTown as opposed to bringing in outside stuff. But I can see how people would really think that was fun to see what something looks and lives in the world of LazyTown that when it doesn't really belong there. I mean, one of the first ones that we became aware of, like, it's not a meme, right? But it's the Lil Jon cooking by the book thing. And I mean, that was pretty wild. And that happened pretty early on, I think, too. And we, you know, saw that fairly early and were like, whoa! But we laughed.
Well, there are so many more memes, ones that are much more stupid than that out there. If you ever decide to peruse it, just make sure that you maybe get a little bit high beforewards.
Yeah. you know, the show, it's helping the show to keep alive and for the characters to keep living. And certainly like the one where everything's replaced with Stingy, it almost feels like an extension of the character in a way that remains true to him, which I appreciate. You know, the fact that these characters are getting a new life and continuing to have a presence even when they're not on broadcast television is definitely something that I appreciate. And it's fun for me to see how people take the work that I did and move it to a different place. I think that's cool.
So, Jody, something that I like to do here at the end of my interviews is to do something a little more fun and lighthearted with my guests. But I don't know if it was what I had for breakfast or the chemtrails in the air or what's going on. But honestly, I'm just not really feeling it today. So I think we're going to just go ahead and skip that. However, I understand that you have a guest over at your house today, a guest that I think I would be very interested in speaking to. Would you be able to put him on the line for me?
Yeah, let me see. Hey, Stingy, there's somebody here on the computer who wants to talk to you.
I am number one. Hey!
Oh, hello, Stingy. It's quite an honor to be speaking with you here. My name is Chris, and to spare you any existential crises, let's just say that I'm a big fan of yours and am very interested in your life. I actually have some questions here about you and was hoping that you would be gracious enough to bestow me with some answers.
Oh, yeah, sure. I love talking about myself.
Well, that certainly doesn't surprise me, and it's great because my first question actually is, how would you describe yourself?
How would I describe myself? Well, I am very intelligent, and I am very careful, and I have lots and lots and lots of interesting things. And basically, I'm kind of in charge of everything, essentially. So a description of myself pretty much includes everything that you see, really.
Now, Stingy, I have another question here from one of your many admirers, and it's something I actually never have really thought about. Is Stingy your actual name, or is it just a nickname?
Well, my full name is Stingy Spolero, but it's not short for anything. No, it is my name, Stingy.
You carry along a possession of yours, Piggy. Very close to Piggy, I can tell. Where did you get Piggy?
I remember when I was very small. I was having a beautiful dream about coins, and they were so shiny and round and lovely, and in my dream it took a dark turn, because I didn't know where I could put them. They were just loose, flying, and then I slowly opened my eyes, and there next to my bed was Piggy. Now, I never did figure out how to get the coins in my dream into Piggy, but I appreciated him being there, and he's been with me ever since.
Similar question. People are always wondering how somebody your age is driving a car around LazyTown. How do you have a car?
Mr. Crow, are you a wealthy person?
Not exactly.
Uh-huh. Are you a peasant?
Maybe to you.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, it's really about status. So I am a wealthy person, and I should be able to show it. And so one of the ways I do that is by having something that nobody else has. And in LazyTown, that is a car. I am the only one who has a car, and it's mine.
What would you do if you were put in charge of LazyTown, if you were the mayor of LazyTown?
The first thing I think that I would do is build a wall. A big, beautiful wall. Because I don't know if you noticed, but we were getting a lot of visitors, which I did not appreciate. I mean, where did that Pinocchio person come from? And if we had a bigger wall to keep those people from just wandering around my town, I think that would be very important, and it would be a top priority of mine.
Thank you, Stingy. Are you aware of how famous you are on the internet?
I believe I'm famous in all places. So I don't know why the internet is so special, but I expect that I would be.
So you think the fame is just, you know, natural to you? Of course you'd be famous. Why wouldn't you be?
Oh, I don't really know what it would be like to not be famous. I assume that most people are talking about me most of the time. I would be more surprised to hear otherwise.
Now, do you have anything you'd like to say to the loyal subjects listening right now? And I'm sure that there are going to be quite a few.
I appreciate my loyal subjects. I would appreciate you more if you would send me money. I am not picky, although I do prefer paper money that is not creased. And if you have paper money that is a little old and a little non-cared for, I believe you can take that to the bank and exchange it for fresh money, and that is what I would prefer you send to me. But gold is always welcome as well.
Well, Sinji, those are all the questions I have for you right now, but I just wanted to say thank you so much for taking the time out of your day today to answer some questions from some of your fans. I think that I can safely speak for everybody when I say thank you for all of the happiness and the laughter and the inspiration that you brought to us over the years. You truly are an indispensable citizen of LazyTown. I wish you all the best, and from the bottom of my heart, really hope to see you in action someday again, walking down the streets of LazyTown where you belong. And I'd appreciate it if you could give that information to Jody as well for me.
Oh, yes. I can't promise I will do the latter because I generally don't share anything. I think I might prefer to keep it to myself. Thanks.
Thanks, Stinchy. You can go back to whatever it is you were doing.
All right, well, I know I've already said it already a couple times during the course of this interview, actually, but another huge thanks to Jody for sitting down with me today to answer our questions. If you would like to support him, please visit storystorynight.org and check out the organization's podcast, which Jody hosts. And if you'd like to support Get Lazy, one of the last bastions on the internet for LazyTown fans, please subscribe to our YouTube channel if you're watching there, or if you're listening on iTunes, go ahead and leave some feedback, preferably some positive feedback, or just register on the site and come say hi in the forum. We would love to talk LazyTown with you, and our in-group, out-group bias is only moderate at best. To all the fans out there, thank you so much for joining me in and helping me create another great LazyTown interview from GetLazy.net, and I'll see you all next time.